I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, everybody. It is a special day, unless you're a Dolphins fan. Special because John William Breach III, made that part up, is back with us. Turns out Debo Breach was here yesterday. Didn't tell anyone, so he didn't join us for the Deshaun Watson Emergency Podcast. John Breach, how was your vacation?
Well, let me tell you, Wilson, I saw a lot of Dolphins, which kind of ties into today's topics. Also, if my hair looks ragged, I don't think I've showered in like 6 days. I'm still haven't unpacked. There's a lot going on here. But you know what? The important fact is that I'm back. And you know what? I did keep quiet yesterday. I wasn't mentally prepared to handle Brinson yet. I needed another day. And so now I am here. And Brinson's not, so I get another day. Wilson, I am ready to roll with, it's news just keeps flying out the entire month of August. We're two days in August. We've had two crazy things.
I know. So I suppose it's appropriate they were talking about MIA, Miami, because Brinson is always, it seems, over the summer, missing in action. I need his little soundboard to dunk on him. But yeah, so the Dolphins, a day after Deshaun Watson's 6-game suspension, which feels like it'll probably increase if the NFL appeals this thing. That's a conversation for another time. But the NFL weighed in. Maybe. So I'll go deep conspiracy theory here, Breach. So NFL weighed in on Tuesday, August 2nd, about Stephen Ross's and the minority owner, Beal, I believe his last name is, they're tampering with Tom Brady in 2019 when he was still a member of the Patriots. They tampered with Tom Brady again. By that, I mean they spoke with him outside the confines of what's legal in the NFL's view. Spoke with him again in 2021 when he's a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in I think December and maybe even January. And they also spoke with Sean Payton before he announced he was going to take a little time off from coaching the Saints. Fun fact, Don Yee is the agent for Tom Brady and Sean Payton. Now, this has been an ongoing investigation for four months or so. I think Mary Jo White was the lead investigator, and we've heard her name in previous NFL-related investigations. I'm pretty sure a former prosecutor. I'll have to double-check that. Do you think, in my tinfoil hat conspiracy brain, that this was announced a day after Deshaun Watson to perhaps distract from what the NFL might be planning to do or to not do as it relates to Deshaun Watson? And then you can weigh in on the actual implications of this for Stephen Ross and the Dolphins.
I don't think that's completely crazy as a theory because, look, you do have all this. You had such a topic that is not divisive. Everybody's just almost on one side, except for Browns fans, that, hey, look, this guy didn't get suspended long enough. There's no such thing as a nonviolent sexual assault. Just you had all of these negative things being said about the punishment against Deshaun Watson. And then you flip the script and you move to this Dolphins thing where pretty much everybody agrees the Dolphins probably deserved the punishment. And the NFL is not going to get any blowback here except for from maybe Stephen Ross. So I don't think it's crazy, your conspiracy theory. I also think it's interesting that Tom Brady is mentioned in this punishment multiple times. He did not get punished, but he's mentioned this investigation multiple times. And this came out the day before his birthday. Happy birthday, Tom Brady. You're going to spend your next press conference answering questions about this for 45 straight minutes. So that should be a fun way to start your 45th year. And then my tinfoil hat, do you think that they put this out here to say that, hey, we do suspend owners? Because remember, one of the key parts of the NFLPA's argument why Deshaun Watson should not be suspended or get a lesser suspension was because the NFL wasn't giving owners these punishments. Robert Kraft didn't get punished. Why should Deshaun Watson? Jerry Jones didn't get punished for the cheerleading scandal. They didn't even investigate it. Daniel Snyder, whatever the heck is going on there, he didn't face any suspension. And so now if the NFL does appeal, they can be like, well, we suspended Stephen Ross. Now we've kind of flipped the script. We're suspending people now. And so now we're going to up Deshaun's suspension. We're giving Stephen Ross suspension. Everybody's getting suspended now if they do anything.
That's actually an interesting one as well. You and Brent are bigger in conspiracy theories than I am, but I think that it feels like, even if we're just sort of making up these conspiracy theories, if there is even a nugget of truth to it, it feels like the NFL is trying to spend so much time covering their tracks. If they just did the right thing initially, it might be a lot easier for them. But it's a lot easier to say when you're dealing with billionaire owners who are used to getting their ways and they get angry. And then you find the billionaire who's easiest to target, and perhaps that's Stephen Ross. And the funny thing, about the report that came out from the NFL is that it also found that there was no evidence of Stephen Ross trying to get the Dolphins to tank for Tua prior to that draft a couple of years ago. Brian Flores came out during the Senior Bowl back in late January or mid-January and said, he was offered $100,000. And according to the report put up by Mary Jo White, and the NFL commented on that if that had been said in that way, and it was unclear the exact wording of that quote-unquote proposal, it was more than likely said in jest. One thing that JJ brought up...
So they're not saying he didn't say it. They're saying that he probably said it, but he was also probably joking. And that's what the exact words by the NFL investigation was that Mr. Ross offered to pay Coach Flores $100,000 to lose games, but there are differing recollections about the wording, timing, and context. So that's not a strict denial. And we didn't mention off the top here that the Dolphins got docked a first round pick.
Thank you. Yes.
First team to lose a first round pick since the Patriots lost one for Deflategate. And then they also lost a third round pick in 2024. First round pick in 2023, third round pick in 2024.
Yeah. Also worth noting, of course, I can't find the actual report, so you can find the specifics for me. But there was one of the findings, or one of the write-ups in the report, was that Stephen Ross was more at times said he was more concerned about the draft than that season's win-loss record, but not to the point where he said actively lose games. And the findings were that Brian Flores and his team played hard, especially at the end of the season where they, I think, beat the Patriots and won another football game. But as JJ pointed out on HQ Tuesday afternoon, the implication is when you say I'm more concerned about the draft in the current season is that you want to lose football games because your draft standing sort of important, especially if you want a quarterback, especially if you're quote unquote tanking for Tua. And I think there's probably some credence to that. But again, if the evidence isn't there, whatever, you can say a lot of things, but if you can't necessarily explicitly say this is what this means, typically, I mean, obviously the NFL likes to punish people randomly, but typically in the U.S. criminal justice system, it doesn't necessarily mean you're guilty of doing what you are accused of.
Right. And I think the other part here is that I would think that any owner who has a last place team after week 11 or week 12 is secretly rooting for their team to lose. If you have no shot at the playoffs, you don't want your team to win. I mean, that's what it boils down to. So if Ross started saying this, as the investigation says, midway through the season, then that's not that crazy. They said he said it most frequently to team president and CEO Tom Garfinkel and general manager Chris Greer. So you have, those are the two people that would be your confidants. They're saying, guys, we just need to lose. We can't, we're eliminated from the playoffs. Our team's horrible. Let's just lose so we can get to the draft and get the number one pick and get Joe Burrow. And then, ironically enough, they end up winning two crazy games toward the end of the season against the Patriots and Bengals, which cost them any shot. Really, the win over the Bengals cost them any shot at the number one overall pick. The other thing about the $100,000 thing, and I know a lot of people on Twitter are saying, how could you say something like that in jest? And like, I don't necessarily agree with the NFL with their investigation findings, but I don't think it's completely implausible that somebody made a statement like that in jest. Like, I have hung out with my brother before and been like, dude, I'll give you $100 if you drink that cat litter that has cat poo in it. And like, I don't expect him to do it. It's just, I'm half serious, half joking. Maybe we're drunk. I don't know. But if he did it, I would give him the money because he fulfilled the bet. But it's not like a real thing. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. And it's funny. Brian Flores released a statement, and so did his lawyers. And Brian Flores basically says, I'm thankful the NFL's investigators found my factual allegations against Stephen Ross are true. And I'll interject here and say, at the time when Brian Flores made these, when this stuff started coming out in January, I think everyone, probably including you, but I know me especially, was like, oh my God, Brian Flores has taken a blowtorch to all this. He will never work again. And everything better be true because it's going to have long-term implications to his ability to be employed as a football coach, unless he wants to coach junior high or something. A few months later, he got hired to be the Steelers linebackers coach. Kevin Colbert came out and couldn't speak highly enough about Brian Flores at the combine, I believe. Mike Tomlin the same. The players have all been supportive and no real pushback, even from Steelers fans. They were happy to have him. And it seems like the, I don't know if the worm has turned is the saying here, but it seems like the spotlight has been put on Stephen Ross, and it shows that he, in fact, did some of these things. And I'll go in and read what Brian Flores also wrote. So he continues, at the same time, I'm disappointed to learn that the investigator minimized Mr. Ross's offer and pressure to tank games, especially when I wrote and submitted a letter at the time to the Dolphins executives documenting my serious concerns regarding the subject. And that's sort of what you're getting to, Breach. And I think, look, and we talked about this yesterday with Deshaun Watson. If you're going to suspend Calvin Ridley for a year, for gambling on his phone using his name because he forgot to use his Ralvin Kidley. Yeah, his Ralvin Kidley burner account. And if this goes to the integrity of the game, this feels like an egregious breach of that integrity. And Brian, I'll just read one more thing for Brian Flores. When the integrity of the game is called into question, fans suffer and football suffers. And I think that's fair. So, Brian Flores' attorneys also issued a statement that basically said that Ross has suffered no real repercussions for his actions. He can't show up into the end of the facility until the middle of October. I mean, who gives a crap about that? He can stay in his mansion, wherever one he chooses. What do you think about the disconnect between Calvin Ridley, year-long suspension for gambling, and gambling in another form when you're asking your coach to tank? And by the way, the coach wrote a letter, so there's written evidence that this took place, submitted to the Dolphins at the time. Where do you come down on that? Even though you mentioned the cat litter joke, I get that as well.
Well, right. And so if the NFL is not sure what the context is, I don't know why they would side with Ross automatically and say, oh, it was obviously a joke when it very well could have been serious. And if you have multiple people telling multiple different versions of the story, there's a kernel of truth in there somewhere. I would have just suspended Stephen Ross for the entire year because then there would have been no blowback. He's an owner. Who cares if he's not there? You know, it's great. He doesn't get to show up. It's not a big deal. The team still has a general manager, a head coach. It can still function. It can still operate. And the NFL would have looked good had they given Ross that kind of suspension. But then I think they would have worried about the optics of that would basically them be that would have basically been the NFL admitting that an owner was trying to throw games and kill the integrity of the game, which I think is really what the league was worried about. But I think the other part you brought up with Brian Flores and as a future head coach is that I wouldn't be surprised if owners, there are going to be several owners who are weary of hiring him. And here's why I think that. And I think Brian Flores did a great job. And if I was an owner, I would hire him. But Stephen Ross, everything he did was win at all costs moves. He was trying to get Tom Brady on his team. That is an owner who wants to win, trying to get Tom Brady. He is trying to get a better draft position because he knows he can't make the playoffs. That's what you try to do. You want to be the, how you improve your team with the highest draft pick. And if you put the best quarterback, and he just did it all legally. And so he deserves every punishment he got. But I think some owners might be like, well, you know, he threw Brian Flores threw Stephen Ross under the bus, even though he did it legally, was trying to win, right?
Yeah, I think the takeaway for me is that owners in general are used to getting their way. They're not used to people telling them no. There's a reason they're worth billions of dollars. You can determine what those reasons are for yourself. But in a perfect world, you hire a good general manager, you hire a good president, and everyone under them, and then you get out of the way and let them figure out the winning. Because I would imagine Stephen Ross probably doesn't know much about football, at least at the level that Chris Greer, Brian Flores, everyone else in that organization knows football. So don't stick your nose in there. Yes, it's your quote unquote team, but in much the same way you own a Mercedes, just assuming here, he probably doesn't fix the Mercedes when it breaks down. He takes it someone knows what they're doing. So I'll just mention one more thing, and then we'll talk about the draft pick penalties, and then we'll move on to the topic of the day. So I mentioned Brian Flores' statement and mentioned some of the things that his lawyers had said. Tell me what you think about this statement from Stephen Ross. The balls on this man is unreal. This statement from Stephen Ross, which came out about an hour ago as we taped this at 2 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. So here's Stephen Ross's statement released via the Dolphins. The independent investigation cleared our organization on any issues related to tanking and all of Brian Flores' other allegations.
I'm going on everything that's incorrect. So we're at two.
As I have said all along, these allegations were false, malicious, and defamatory, and this issue is now put to rest. With regards to tampering, I strongly disagree with the conclusions and the punishment. However, I will accept the outcome because the most important thing is that there be no distractions for our team as we begin an exciting and winning season. I will not allow anything to get in the way of that. I mean, how angry are you if you're Brian Flores when you read this?
I mean, the gall of this man to release the statement is unbelievable that he is saying this investigation cleared. No, this is insane that he did this. This was a very interesting statement. And you know, the other thing about this whole investigation is, how do you feel if you're either McDaniel or Tua right now? Because you're reading that literally 5 months ago, Stephen Ross didn't want you. He wanted Sean Payton. Didn't want Tua. He wanted Tom Brady. And so you're stuck with your backup picks. And, you know, that's not a great feeling, especially if you're Mike McDaniel going into your first year. Because if you struggle with this team they've built around him, there's a lot of pressure on you now, knowing that they didn't even want you. And that now that they have you, you better succeed. So, you know, there's multiple layers to this.
Right. And because Mike McDaniel is mixed, like I am, he might suffer the David Culley fate and get fired after 1 year. That's a joke. But the interesting thing is Mike McDaniel was hired on February 7th. So that was after the talking with Sean Payton conversation happened in January.
Right after the Sean Payton thing fell through.
So I think you feel better about if you're Mike McDaniel than if it happened after you got hired.
Well, yeah, definitely.
But the other thing is, I think Mike McDaniel might be okay. He's young. He was like on the short list of guys that were going to get jobs anyway. And David Culley got fired for one season, perhaps unfairly, but that team still did win four football games. The other issues, I think if you're Tua, you probably feel a little better because there's one less.
Well, and David Culley was put in a trash no-win situation. I mean, he got.
Well, this isn't if this thing goes sideways early, like this team wins seven might be okay.
Well, right. But I'm saying McDaniel has a lot of talent around him. The Dolphins have much higher expectations. If McDaniel only wins four games, he arguably, I'm not going to say deserves to be let go after 1 year, but you could justify it. There was no justification for letting Culley go because no one thought that team was going to win four games.
Yeah, fair enough. I think this might be better case for Tua than that they only have. Because here's the thing. The Dolphins had two first-round picks going into the 2023 draft. So if you really wanted to send a statement, you could take away both picks. I mean, I think that says a lot more than taking away one pick. Or maybe even give it back to the 49ers. How awesome would that be? Because that pick came from San Francisco when they traded to get Trey Lance two drafts ago.
That would be amazing.
because you're actually, well, you're not penalizing San Francisco if you just do away with both picks, because they got their return on investment is
yeah, that's why you're the drafter, man. I didn't even think about the fact the Dolphins had two first round picks.
Like, well, this, I had to look.
It's a punishment without being, you know, like, obviously they still have a first round pick, so it's not as back.
Here's the thing. Let's say Trey Lance struggles and they only win eight games. So then the Dolphins still have the 15th overall pick. I mean, who does that benefit?
Well, we don't know which pick they stripped, though. I mean, it's probably theirs, right?
Right. Yeah, I think they took the Dolphins. I don't
know. What if it's just the higher of the two?
That would be smarter, but I mean,
better.
What if they take the 49ers pick and then the Dolphins tank? but yeah, so Tua should feel somewhat better. That said, you still have one first round pick. They can't move up as much. They also lost their third round pick in the subsequent draft in 2024. But they're going to be four or five quarterbacks that are going to be in the first round conversation once the season starts. There'll be a guy or two that sneaks in there that wasn't on anyone's radar in August, September. And the Dolphins, if Tua is just mediocre, he doesn't have to be terrible. But if he has 20 touchdowns and 18 interceptions, you're going to be looking for a quarterback, especially with Tyreek, Jalen Waddle, Mike McDaniel going into year two, presumably. So hopefully Tua plays well. I think he's been doing pretty well at camp from the headlines and the reports I've seen. But it's all going to come down to him. Like, it's not going to come down to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. That doesn't matter. All that matters is Tua. So that's the Dolphins news. Does this
real quick fun fact? Yeah. You know, the Dolphins trying for 3 years basically to lure Brady in. They're actually going to get Brady, but only to practice with him because they have joint practices with the Buccaneers next week, August 10th and 11th.
And I'll mention this quickly. JJ also mentioned this in HQ. He said he doesn't know of any rule where it's illegal to talk to teams who are talking to you illegally. So I don't think Tom Brady or Sean Payton, for the matter, would face any punishments.
I'm actually looking at, there's already been, the NFL PR has already said Brady won't be punished.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally looking at the NFL anti-tampering policy as we speak. And it basically said if a club is contacted by a player, so if Brady, even if Brady initiated the conversation, it's the club's responsibility to shut it down and say, we need to stop. You can't do this, bro. You got to stop talking to me. We can't talk football. We can't negotiate. We can't do anything. And then, yeah, that's basically it. It's the team's responsibility to shut it down.
By the way, I can't get over Stephen Ross's response. I love it. Like, I would be infuriated if I were Brian Flores at the nerve of this man. But hey, you know, like I said, these guys aren't used to people saying no to them. So, all right, we'll take a quick break, come back, and then we'll actually talk about some burning questions. The NFC East.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. NFC East burning questions. So we'll start with the Cowboys. Saw the headline that my guy, James Washington, former Steeler, had a foot injury. He's going to be out 5 to 6 weeks, I think. So that's an issue, especially since their wide receiver group is also without Amari Cooper, who is now in Cleveland. So let's just start.
They have one wide receiver on their roster who has caught a touchdown pass in the NFL.
CD.
One healthy.
Is CD healthy?
That is CD.
Okay, good. I don't know if I missed that too. All right, so we'll just go with the first talking point. That let's see, what's Debo saying? Okay, so the first talking point brought to our guy by, it's on CBSSports.com. Cody Benjamin wrote these up, and is the offensive line healthy enough? And we'll get to the wide receivers in a second.
I'm not even so much worried about their health. That's, I mean, obviously that is a worry because Tyron Smith has been banged up for a while. But you're looking at an offensive line that lost two starters. Lael Collins obviously now playing for the Bengals. And then obviously we spent all this time talking about the Dolphins. Connor Williams just left Dallas to sign with the Dolphins. So they lost a starting guard and a starting tackle. So those are holes they have to fill. Then you have to worry about the fact that Tyron Smith has had health issues. Then you probably have the starting left guard who's a rookie in Tyler Smith, not to be confused with Tyron Smith. And so you're talking about two new linemen, two new starters, a rookie starter, and a left tackle, I'm trying to get four up there, who is banged up. So really, Zach Martin is like your only – it's just – I'd be a little bit worried about the offensive line from the Cowboys.
I think that's a fair concern. Tyler Smith out of Tulsa, I didn't love him as a first-round pick. Some teams did, and some teams liked him more on day two. Either way, we'll find out. But the issue for me, he's young, so he'll get better. I think he was 20 when he was drafted, maybe 21. He led the nation, or he was extremely proficient at getting holding calls last year. So that's a concern. That was a left tackle, so he'll kick inside. So perhaps that mitigates some of those concerns. So just the fact that he's a rookie out there, that's just something to keep an eye on. Hopefully he'll end up being a good player. Tyler Biadasz is the center out of Wisconsin. He's good. He's not great. I mean, they had Frederick for the longest time. That former first-round pick. Was Frederick the one they drafted instead of Johnny Manziel in 2014? I think it was. I think that's the right decision they made because they locked Jerry Jones in the closet, and then Stephen Jones took Frederick over Johnny Manziel. I think that's right. And that's just
They took Zach Martin.
Oh, Zach Martin. Well, Zach Martin's still there, still playing at a high level. Okay. So
he's still there, and he's still
right. It was
the best guards in the NFL.
So yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern. Always we come back to they're playing in that division, so that's a positive because that division's not very good except for Depot's Eagles. But it doesn't matter. You're still playing against guys who can get after it. So if your offensive line is an issue, and your quarterback is the centerpiece of your offense, which it should be if your offense is sort of clicking, that's something to keep an eye on. Cody also asks, and the story you can find on CBSSports.com, will Tony Pollard's role actually expand? So I saw a headline the other day where Jerry Jones was talking about the importance of Zeke being more Zeke-like. Is the fact that he's paying Zeke so much money going to have an effect on how often Tony Pollard is used? Because I know Cowboys fans seem to really like Tony Pollard.
I would say yes, because every year that seems to be the case. You think that maybe, hey, look, 2019, Tony Pollard looks good, and he'll get more carries next year, and then he doesn't. And then 2020, hey, Tony Pollard looks pretty good. Maybe he'll get more touches next year, and then he doesn't. And then he did get a few more touches last year, but I think that was more to do with Zeke being banged up than the Cowboys finally turning the page and giving Tony Pollard the ball more. So when Jerry Jones says, he literally said Ezekiel Elliott has, quote, got to be our feature running back in the run game. That's what Jerry Jones wants. That's what's going to happen until his contract is off the book. So I think they'll probably run Zeke into the ground and you know, maybe Tony Pollard catches a few passes out of the backfield, but I think it's going to be a lot of what we've seen over the past 3 years.
Yeah. And the rest of the depth chart is Rico Dowdle, Malik Davis, Aaron Shamkin. Those last two are undrafted free agents. Tony Pollard's contract, his rookie deal, is up after the season. He's 25 right now, and his base salary is only $965,000 this year. So, I mean, the Cowboys are just doing it backwards. Like, this is the guy that you just lean on because he's making peanuts. And obviously, you don't sign Zeke Elliott to that deal, but that's water under the bridge, as my grandma used to say, breach. So, yeah, that's what Jerry wants with him. I'm sure that's what Jerry will get. And now let's talk about what we led with here, the wide receivers. So James Washington's injured. You mentioned that CeeDee Lamb is the only one on the roster who is healthy, who has caught a touchdown pass. Michael Gallup tore his ACL last year, so he's coming back from that. Jalen Tolbert, they drafted out of South Alabama. He reminds me of Will Fuller, but he struggles with focus drops. So at least in college, hopefully that has gotten better in the offseason as they head into training camp. Simi Fioko out of Stanford, sort of a raw project type player they drafted last year. And after that, man, it is slim pickings. So sweet Jesus. This, you compare this group of wide receiver to the Eagles, and it's like not even close.
Yeah, this is maybe why Jerry Jones said we have to rely on Zeke, because there's no one else to rely on. Who you can throw the ball to? Who's Dak Prescott throwing the ball to? It is CeeDee Lamb or bust. The Cowboys don't know.
Dalton Schultz.
They don't know if Michael Gallup is going to be healthy or ready for week one or week two or week three. They're hoping for the best. James Washington injury could bleed into mid-October. It's 6 to 10 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks. And if it ends up being the full 10 weeks, you're talking about mid to late October before he's back on the field. And you just don't have a lot of experience here. It's CeeDee Lamb or no one as far as the receivers go. And if that's the case, do you go out and try and sign a veteran?
Will Fuller. Odell Beckham, who also tours.
Odell Beckham, I think, would be interesting. What about bring your boy Cole Beasley back?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But again, he's just not a big play threat. Like, you know, Odell Beckham, again, he tours ACL.
You have CD for the big plays.
That's true. Yeah, no, I think Cole Beasley, Manny Sanders, no one is off the table at this point.
But if you bring in someone like Odell, you're back at square one, because he's probably not going to be ready in week one or week two. And so you're right. you still have no depth for the first couple weeks of the season.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm trying to find the over-under wins. There we go. All right, let's see what we have for the Cowboys. And then you tell me whether it's over or under. I wish there was an easier way to navigate this site that I use for gambling that we use all the time.
Well, it's because you go to a handwritten website that's not actually on a computer.
That's the one that we're married to. Gosh. I think
you are looking for 10.5 wins.
Thank you. There it is. Of course, I find it. 10.5. Over 10.5 is plus 125. Juice to the over there, right? Plus is over. Plus is juice. And under 10.5 is minus 145. Oh, my gosh. 10.5. What do you like?
I like the – they won 12 games, and they're in an easy division. And I know it's crazy, but it's just – you like the under. I get it. Hey, look, they won the division by 3 games last year. Do I think the Eagles got better? Yes. Do I think the Giants Commanders got better? Yes. I don't think they picked up 3 games. I don't think they've closed the gap completely. I still think the Cowboys are the best team in the division, and I think they can sneak their way to 11 wins.
Worst offensive line, no wide receivers.
I mean,
one fewer win.
That's not ideal, but they went 6. They went 6-0 in the division last year. I don't think they're going to go 2-4. I think worst case scenario they go 4-2. And then at that point, you have to go 7-4 in your other 11 games. You have games against teams like the Texans and Jacksonville and Detroit. So I just think their schedule sets up for getting to double-digit wins. Just a matter of whether they get to 10 or 11.
All right, I'm going under. You're going over. I'm sure this will change.
You're going under?
Yeah.
Are you picking to win that division?
You mentioned
Eagles? You like the Eagles. I could tell.
Well, you mentioned 4-2 in the division after going 6-0. Those two losses could come to the Debo Eagles. So let's talk about the Eagles right now. Worth noting, Cody Benjamin, who wrote the story, is a bigger Eagles homer than Debo, if that's possible. So these questions have some heft behind them. First question to Breach, and then, of course, Debo will no doubt weigh in. Is Jalen Hurts ready to throw the ball more? So a year ago, it felt like Nick Sirianni, in year one as a head coach, wanted Jalen Hurts to throw the ball 50 times a game for the first month or so this season, and then he sort of figured out that it might be in the team's best interest just to have some balance on the offense, and they got better. So still, that said, if you're going to overtake your front runners, the Cowboys, I get it, understandably so. Dak Prescott is the best quarterback in that division. Your quarterback has to be able to play a little bit. So where are you on Jalen Hurts? Can he throw the ball more and be more consistent? They have A.J. Brown now, who they traded for on draft day. Devontae Smith's going into year two. What do you think?
I don't know what to do here if I'm Nick Sirianni. Because, look, once you started running the ball, that was your bread and butter. I mean, you look at how bad the Eagles were running the last couple of years with Doug Peterson at the helm, and they just were not good at running the ball. And then what happens? Nick Sirianni shows up, and they led the NFL in rushing last year. They averaged 159.7 yards per game. No other team in the NFL even averaged 150 yards per game. So they just ran over everyone. And so it feels like if that's your bread and butter, you should stick to it. But you can't. Then if you do that, you're not getting the ball to guys like Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, unless you turn one of them into Debo Samuel. I just think, yes, you need to let Jalen Hurts throw the ball a little bit more, but you can't overdo it. You got to make sure your run game's still involved, because it's part of what makes the Eagles successful. And Jalen Hurts' ability to run also adds into that. So I don't think you can just throw that in the trash.
So Jalen Hurts last year threw the ball 432 times, completed 61% of his passes. He rushed 139 times for 784 yards. That's huge. Led the team in rushing. Debo, over under 450 pass attempts for Jalen Hurts.
I think it'll be slightly higher. He played in 15 games last year. So if you project out a full season, you know, the first 5 weeks, like you said, he was throwing 36 times a game. And then over the last 10 games was throwing 25 times a game. And that's kind of that 25 to 30 passes a game is the range that I'd like to see. But like Breach said, you can't ignore how this offensive line is built and how conducive it is for Jalen Hurts' running style. So a little bit more, but not a ton more in my mind.
Debo, might as well come back to you. Does Jonathan Gannon, the OC, have a plan for his new pieces? I can't believe Cody asked that question. He knows the answer to that question. What have you heard?
That would be the defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon.
My bad. The OC is Shane Steichen.
Yeah, to add Hassan Reddick, Jordan Davis as a first-round pick, James Bradbury, some notable additions. You know, obviously expressed my displeasure with Nick Sirianni early in the year. That changed over the course of last season. I don't think my thoughts around Jonathan Gannon changed much as the season developed. And I'm not super keen on them changing entering this year. That's probably the biggest burning question for me is kind of how he orchestrates this defense and if he can weave them well together. Already we're hearing reports that Hassan Reddick is dropping back a lot in pass coverage when been one of the most dynamic pass rushers in the NFL over the past two seasons. So already some continued burning questions, I'd say, there for me.
Yeah, I have to apologize to Cody. I was calling him out for a question whether the offense is going to be ready. Jonathan Gannon, as Debo notes, is the defensive coordinator. So, right, Jordan Davis they drafted, and Kobe Dean they got in the third round. Jordan Davis' teammate who slipped because of injury issues. You mentioned James Bradbury. They added him. I don't know if you knew this, Breacher, if you remembered it, because I had forgotten. Eagles also signed Kwaski Tart.
I can't pick them now in good spirits. On principle, I cannot pick them in good faith.
And I mentioned Kwaski Tart because he is the man that allowed Brinson to have the great pleasure of watching Matthew Stafford win a Super Bowl, because Kwaski Tart somehow dropped that arm punt interception in the NFC title game. So that's the sort of the defensive side of the ball are sort of where the questions are, more so than the offensive side of the ball. I still think this defense has a chance to be pretty good. Debo has some reservations about Jonathan Gannon. Do you have any concerns at all about this defense, Breach?
I mean, sure. This is a defense that gave up 30 or more points in five games last season. That's
but
not
they've gotten better in the secondary.
Right. So I'm saying there are some concerns, and I do think they made some great moves, and I do think the defense will be better. So, you know, Jonathan Gannon's got to make all the pieces fit. He's got to make this puzzle work. You can't just cram it together and try and make the corner piece fit where a middle piece goes. You just got to. I think it's going to be better than it was last season.
I do too. I mean, I like a lot. I'm looking at some of these names in the secondary now that weren't there before. They're going into year two, like Zach McPherson, Kayvon Wallace. I think those guys are going to be better. Reed Blankenship's he was undrafted free agent. Mario Goodrich out of Clemson, I like a lot. Josh Jobe out of Alabama. He had some day one, day two buzz a year ago at this time. So he played clearly at Alabama. He's going to get some great competition. Jimmy Moreland was out of JMU. Undersized, played for Washington for a few years, but I like the way he played in college. And of course, my guy Javon Hargrave in the middle. That front four is insane. And then you add Jordan Davis, if you want to add him as the fifth option. I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism. All right, what else you got, Cody? Who's starting safety? So, Debo, we'll come back to you because you're the resident expert, and then we'll weigh in.
It's the guy that kind of propelled this podcast into Matthew Stafford is a Hall of Famer territory, I think.
Deeply. So what about Anthony Harris, Marcus Epps, Kayvon Wallace? Where do they fit in?
I think I've heard some good things around Marcus Epps, but I think Harris is your guy, and Tart are going to form the starting safeties.
How do you feel about Jaquaski Tartt? Because prior to that, I think we all generally had the opinion that Tartt's a good player. You know, he's, we don't hear his name called a lot. And then, you know, the arm punt thing sort of happened.
I mean, that's what happens in these significant moments. I'm not going to say it's quite like Bill Buckner-esque.
Oh, my gosh. You invoke Bill Buckner's name.
I mean, it kind not of decided off. A title to an extent, right?
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
I don't think it's crazy. But, yeah, a good player, hard hitter, I think will be embraced by Philly as long as he doesn't drop a crucial interception in the NFC Championship.
By the way, RIP Bill Buckner. I was actually alive for that. I don't know if either of you were. Alive and watching baseball. I was a huge baseball fan at that point. Hate to see it. Do you know who was rounding? Who hit that ball, Breece? Do you remember who hit that ball?
It was Red Sox Mets. Was that the game?
Yeah. I think I know who hit it, and I know who scored. I'll see if I can. I think Mookie Wilson hit it.
Mookie hit it.
And I think that Nancy Lopez's husband, Ray Knight. Ray Knight scored. I think that's right. Is that right, Debo?
I know Mookie's right.
Nancy Lopez. I can't believe I got that. I couldn't remember Ray Knight's name, but Nancy Lopez's name. Oh, God.
And wait, that was game six when Buckner did that?
I think so, yeah.
And so the Red Sox literally had another entire game to try and win the World Series, and they didn't.
Right.
And they also blew a 3-0 lead in game seven,
oh,
which was not Bill Buckner's fault. It was the pitcher's fault. I won't name any names, but I'm just saying. It's amazing.
Who scored? All right, we'll look for that in a second. Oh, here it is. Yeah, Ray Knight. Dang, pretty good.
Wow, Wilson.
Not bad for an old man.
The point system is that gets a lot of points.
Yeah, I was wrong about Travis Frederick, but I got the 86 Red Sox Mets game six game right. All right, let's do the over under real quick on this team as well. Do you have it in front of you? I'm scrolling. I'm sure it'll be the last one I look at.
I got rid of it. If I thought you would have kept it up.
I have it up. I just
for a while it was nine. I'm not positive. If
yeah, it's up. Still nine. Debo's right. Over-under's nine. So Breech, I love the over two. I mean, you're telling me they're two, a game and a half worse than the Cowboys? I don't think so. Debo, you obviously going over nine. You're going to be conservative.
I will say over nine.
Oh, there you go. So you know.
Not even a game and a half worse than the Cowboys. They won nine games last year. And do you think they're better or worse?
Better. I'm going over. Yeah, better.
No, I can't believe the over-under is sitting at nine. I'm incredulous. I'm not arguing.
You're not. I think you're incredulous. It's not like flammable and inflammable. It doesn't mean the same thing.
Did it sound like I said credulous? I said incredulous.
Nice try to save that one. You 100% said credulous.
I said incredulous. Nobody ever says they're credulous. That's like when you're overwhelmed. Nobody says they're just whelmed. It's just nobody ever says credulous. I said incredulous.
You would 100% say you're whelmed. All right. Speaking of
all the time
credulous and whelming teams, let's go to the Commanders.
That's a whelming team.
I love Cody's first question. What is Carson Wentz here to do? That, Cody, is the question. That's a question that's
also some shade.
I would imagine that Cody, like Debo, is a huge Carson Wentz homer. At least he was until, you know.
I mean, based on that question, I would say he no longer is.
He no longer is. Breech, what is Carson Wentz here to do?
I mean, I have no idea. Are you handing the ball off? You cannot design. You know, we heard Nathaniel Hackett talking about, we're designing the whole offense around Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's going to make us go. If we're getting the Super Bowl, it's because of Russell Wilson. That doesn't work with Carson Wentz. You're not designing your whole offense around Carson Wentz. You are not getting to the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz. And so I think you have to decide, are we a team that trusts Antonio Gibson and those running backs out of the backfield, and we'll just play it safe. We'll hand off a lot. We'll have Carson Wentz check down all the time. Or are you going to let him take risks like he did in Indianapolis, where he would just wing it downfield and pray for a pass interference flag? You know, I think they have enough receiving talent that if Wentz can be accurate and maybe get back to 2017 form. Yeah, I know you're making the face. That's how I feel saying this. But you have Terry McLaurin. You have Curtis Samuel. You have Jahan Dotson. So if Wentz could put the pieces back together, maybe the offense could be good. Maybe.
I am credulous. So I'll just put it to you this way. And for some reason, people push back on this, and maybe you'll do the same. Taylor Heinicke athletically is not Carson Wentz. I think we can all agree on that. Taylor Heinicke, in my mind, is just as replacement level as Carson Wentz. Without looking, what was Taylor Heineke's record last year in 15 starts?
Not good. 6-9.
7-8.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Let's say Carson plays the first 15 games. Will he win 7 games?
It's all about the schedule. If you have an easier schedule, he could. I mean, they open up with Jacksonville and Detroit. Washington could be 2-0, and people are fanning themselves over Carson Wentz because he played awesome against two mediocre teams.
Yeah. My point is that I don't know what the differentiation is with Taylor Heineke and Carson Wentz. That's all I'm saying. So, yeah, so that's, I think, your answer about what's Carson Wentz here to do is about the right answer. He's not the team you can put on your back. You have to have the complementary pieces helping him. The defense has to step up. Chase Young is back from the ACL injury, so on the defense they have to do more, so on and so forth. Jahan Dotson, you mentioned, important piece to in terms of the making the offense good. They drafted Brian Robinson. Earlier than I thought he would go, but that's fine, whatever, to offer some backup behind Antonio Gibson. They drafted Phil Mathis, also out of Alabama, on the other side of the ball. I'm looking to see what else they drafted on defense. Sam Howell, gosh, my number 3 quarterback, Sam Howell, my number 2 quarterback, who I liked a lot. He ended up going in the 5th round. Crushed that one. So, yeah, we'll see. I think it's safe to say I have low expectations for this team. Over, under 7.5. Keep that in mind, Breach, because we still have a few more questions beyond Carson Wentz. Is there enough or a plan, all kind of shade from Cody, at receiver? So we mentioned Scary Terry, who's looking for a new – did Terry get a new deal yet?
Yes.
Okay, so he got his new deal. A.J. Brown got his new deal. DK Metcalf got his new deal. And one other young receiver got a new deal.
And Debo.
Debo. So they're all paid up, and as A.J. Brown noted, only one got traded. Make of that what you will. So they have Scary Terry, who deserved to get paid because he was basically that offense. Curtis Samuel, who struggled last year with injuries. They have De'Ami Brown, who they drafted a few years ago to UNC, who was looking to take the next step. You already talked about Jahan Dotson. So I think they have enough. Antonio Gandy-Golden just retired after 2 seasons, I think, out of Liberty. They have Kelvin Harmon at NC State, who hasn't really put it together yet, and he's probably more of a number 4, number 5 guy. Dax Milne at BYU. So I feel like they have enough, but again,
they have enough if it all works out. If Curtis Samuel can stay healthy, you mentioned the injuries. I think he's already missed a few training camp practices, which is not good after what happened with him last year. We don't know that Jahan Dotson is going to be good. He might impress in training camp, but until you actually get on the field and see that in an actual game, it's hard to say. So, you know, it feels like it could be an okay receiving group, but they also have a pretty low floor because they could end up being bad. It's just Terry McLaurin carrying the whole receiving group.
Yeah. Logan Thomas, who is in his 30s now, they drafted Cole Turner out of Nevada, who played with Carson Strong. Carson Strong now on the Eagles roster. So, yeah, they need a lot of things to go right. They have the names there. They have to be healthy and on the field and producing, and we haven't seen that consistently from anyone other than Logan Thomas to a degree, obviously, than Scary Terry. Is the secondary up to the task is a question that Cody also asks. So the secondary includes Kendall Fuller, Cameron Curl, Bobby McCain, and some guy named William Jackson III, who you have experience with because he was drafted in the 1st round by the Bengals, 2016. 1 pick before the Steelers were going to take him, and the Steelers had to take, what's his name, out of Artie Burns out of the U, and that did not work out. They also have Benjamin St. Juice out of Minnesota from last year's draft, and a lot of young guys. Derek Forrest out of Cincinnati's going into year 2. Percy Butler was a safety draft. I think he was drafted on day 3 out of Louisiana, home to Emory Hunt. So I think the secondary questions here are much bigger than the ones we just talked about with the Eagles.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, you need big years from Kendall Fuller and William Jackson, and they're both talented. So if both of them are on their A game this year, then that's huge. You have 2 solid players on opposite sides at the corner positions, and then your questions become, are our safeties good enough to compete in this division. And so that's where I think it gets a little more dicey.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. All right, 7.5 over under. I mean, can you make a case for this team that went 7-10 a year ago, doing better than that this year?
I think they go 7-10 again.
So you're going under.
Is that
no? That's
looking out. Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's under.
All right.
I don't know if they win 7 games. That feels like a lot, if I'm being honest with you. And
I thought 7 games last year felt like a lot too. I don't even know how they did it.
I can't believe that actually Ryan Fitzpatrick started week one last year. It feels like he's been retired for 10 years. Is Ryan Fitzpatrick 2 years ago better than Carson Wentz this year? Who would you rather have is the question I'm asking to play for this football team. I think so too. Look, I don't even think it's controversial. That's where we're at. All right, one more team to go. Little sneak peek. I don't think this team we're going to talk about next is the worst team in the division, but that's the order we're going in, probably based on last year's record, in which they won 4 games. Joe Judge got fired. Dave Gettleman got fired, so I do the fake typing maneuver. Hired Brian Daboll. Hired who they hire? Who's the GM from the Bills that they hired?
Joe Shane.
So Joe Shane, Brian Daboll are now in the building. We know Brian Dable's success with quarterbacks, especially one named Josh Allen. That leads us to Cody's question. What does Daniel Jones have to do to stick around beyond 2022? And that's a fantastic question. We were talking early in the show about how if Tua struggles, the Dolphins still have one other first-round pick in order to determine what to do with the quarterback situation. I'm pretty sure the Giants have at least one first-round pick. I'll check real quick. So what has to happen? Yeah, they have a first-round pick in 2023. What has to happen for the team not to move on from Danny Dimes next year?
Well, I think that if he gets to at least 8 wins, they'll think about keeping him around, but you don't have any incentive to. It's like kind of – he's not a guy that's going to get you to a Super Bowl. You don't feel like he's your franchise quarterback, so he's really going to have to wow with the new coaching staff. That being said, I'm not high on Daniel Jones, but I don't think I'm as low as everyone else. I actually think he can be an okay quarterback with a competent coach. And Brian Daboll feels like a competent coach. We saw what he did with Josh Allen, completely turned around his career. Josh Allen's gotten better every single year. And so if he can cut down on the turnovers, I think that Daniel Jones could lead his team to 7 or 8 wins, as ridiculous as that might sound.
I don't even think that. I sort of agree with you on that. You're wildly up. You're wildly optimistic at times. But I said this all the time, especially during draft season. If Daniel Jones had gone to the second round, no one would care. He'd be Andy Dalton in terms of expectations. Andy Dalton came in and went to the playoffs the first 5 years. We've talked about that. The funny thing is, like, Daniel Jones' very first start against the Buccaneers, his rookie season, he was just absolute lights out. And, you know, people had to apologize. Remember Dan Orlovsky having to apologize on ESPN for not loving Daniel Jones. And Giants fans were gloating for that 1 week, and then things just took a terrible turn south. But I think you're right. I think he is not, like, we make him out to be, not to dump on Carson Wentz. He's not Carson Wentz. I think he has more upside than Carson Wentz. Hasn't had the injury history. I think he had the ankle injury last year that caused him some problems. He had some injury that at the end of the year was bothering him. But I think in general, you can win with him. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with him. I get that. But, I mean, in Carolina, is he better than Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield? He's probably in between those two. Like, I have higher hopes for Baker Mayfield, mostly the athleticism, the arm strength. In Atlanta, is he better than Marcus Mariota? Yeah. Jameis or Daniel Jones in New Orleans, who would you want?
With that coaching staff, probably Jameis. But if, like, Sean Payton was the coach, maybe Daniel Jones. I just think that Daniel Jones can thrive with the right coaching. But if it's not there, that he's going to look like he did the past few years.
Right. Like, how about that? How about the Rams? Like, he's probably somewhere between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, probably closer to Jared Goff, but that team went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff. So yeah, I think he's not better than Jimmy Garoppolo. I give Jimmy Garoppolo too hard a time, but he, again, in that vein, he would have success with Kyle Shanahan, I would imagine. Would you rather have Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, or Geno Smith in Seattle?
Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All right. So, what is expected of Brian Daboll this season? Personally, I think he could probably not win a single football game. He'll come back next year just because of the craziness, the perceived craziness under Joe Judge. I don't know how crazy it was in fact. But I think Brian Daboll is a guy that he has 3 years no matter what. And the hope is that he can fix Daniel Jones this year. If not, you draft the quarterback, and then you have 2 years to make that work.
Yes, I like that. And yeah, and that's the thing is you do have the franchise tag, so you don't have to – if it's something intermediate where they win 7 or 8 games, it's enough where you're like, okay, maybe this guy could be good. You don't have to give him that long-term contract. You just hit him with the franchise tag and you give him another 1 year test.
Yeah. I think he probably, I'll put it to you this way. His leash will be much longer than Mike McDaniel's leash in Miami. Based on his track record, like Mike McDaniel's known as sort of the run game coordinator and he has a lot of success there, but I think Kyle Shanahan was dialing up most of the plays, whereas Brian Daboll was able to get the most out of Josh Allen, as you've probably heard by now. All right, Cody finally asked about this Giants team. Who is expected to defend the pass? So before you defend the pass, you have to sort of talk about who's rushing the passer. They drafted Kayvon Thibodeau with one of their first-round picks, which I thought was a fantastic selection. They have Azeez Ojulari, who actually had a lot of sacks last year, sort of under the radar, second-round pick because of a knee injury, probably first-round talent. Dexter Lawrence, they drafted in the first round a few years ago. So the front four, along with Leonard Williams, is pretty stout. In the back end, Aaron Robinson, I think he's a UCF guy. I liked him coming out. Julian Love out of Notre Dame. Xavier McKinney, the safety out of Alabama. Adoree Jackson, they signed from Tennessee a few years ago. Darnay Holmes out of UCLA. All guys coming into their second, third year. Then, of course, Adoree Jackson's the veteran. They drafted Dane Belton out of, I think he's an Iowa kid. Let me double check. And then Cordell Flott out of LSU, who is, Iowa. Cordell Flott might weigh 160 pounds, but he is good, man. So hopefully he's put on some weight and is able to compete, but he's listed as the backup at nickelback. But this is a fair question. Like, they don't have a lot of experience and sort of experience depth in the secondary, while the front four is going to be tasked with getting after it, sort of take the to lighten the load of that group. What do you just sort of eyeball on this? Are you more concerned about this secondary? Or are you more concerned about the Washington secondary?
Well, I think if I have a secondary that I'm worried about, the NFC East is the division I want to be playing in. I mean, we just talked about how the Cowboys have nothing behind CeeDee Lamb right now because of their injury situation. We just talked about how the Commanders, Terry McLaurin's the only proven receiver on that roster right now. And then, yeah, you have the Eagles, obviously, with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. But how good is Jalen Hurts going to be if he's asked to throw the ball more, or are the Eagles going to stick to the ground game? And if they do, then you're the Giants are saying, thank God we don't have to test our secondary because they're running the ball. I mean, it's not an ideal situation, but because they play in the NFC East, I also don't think it's something that is backbreaking and is going to keep them from competing. Not that I think they're going to win the division, but I don't think it's going to destroy their season.
What did I say the Washington over-under was? Do you remember?
7.5.
Okay, the Giants is at 7.
Woo! Woo, doggy. 7-0. Yeah, I have went through their schedule, had them winning 7 games, and that's a cop-out. I asked if the last one was a cop-out. This is a cop-out.
So you're pushing? Is that what you're doing?
You should be able to bet on the push. Why can't you bet on the push?
I mean, you can. It's like betting on...
If you bet the under, you have 0 through 6 wins. If you bet the over, you have 8 through 17. I'm guessing I'm one exact number.
You're betting what is it, 00 on the roulette wheel? You're betting the green?
Betting the green.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going over. I think this team's going to finish third in the division. And I think that the Washington Commanders are going to struggle a little bit for the reasons we talked about. And they don't win 8 games. No, they can win 8 games. They won 4 last year, though.
I don't think it's crazy. I mean, you look at what they did last season. Obviously, they only won 4 games. I don't think they're going to be that bad again. And you look at this year, you know, like you just said, if the Commanders aren't good, you have 2 games against Commanders. You get to play the Lions. You get to play the Texans. You get to play Jacksonville. You get to play the Carolina Panthers, who might be bad. You get to play the Chicago Bears. They just have a lot of the Seahawks. That's a winnable game now.
Also, Daniel Jones was 4-7 in his 11 starts before the injury. Mike Glennon went 0-4. Jake Fromm went 0-2 in their starts.
So if people look at the record and see 4-13, you can't put that all on Daniel Jones.
Yeah, so he was on pace to win 8 games. Right, is that right? A little more than eight. If you could tell me who was third on the team in attempts, and it was more than two attempts.
Eesh. Was it a player? Was it a quarterback?
No.
Now I'm onto it. One of the receivers?
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't say punter. That would usually be your go-to. Yeah, Kadarius Toney, one for three. He threw the ball three times last year.
Maybe try a different trick play.
So, yeah, Kadarius Toney is coming into year two. I think he's been looking pretty good from the camp reports I've seen. They also have Kenny Galladay. They drafted Wandale Robinson. Evan Neal is now – not Evan Neal. They drafted him. But Evan Engram is now in Jacksonville, so they have the tight end position is actually an interesting one. Daniel Bellinger is listed as the number one. He's a rookie out of San Diego State, so I don't know how long that's going to last. But Saquon Barkley is also back and has looked good from what I've heard. Matt Breida is there now. So there you go. That's the burning questions via Cody Benjamin on CBSSports.com. You can read about it for the NFC East. Anything else, Breach?
No, I think we hit all the burning questions. We had some exciting times talking about the Miami Dolphins.
The MIAs.
The MIAs.
Both the Dolphins and the Brinsons. All right, well, we'll be back tomorrow for more Pick Six podcasts. And I would encourage you to tune in just to see if Brinson shows up, because right now that's the Where's Waldo game we're playing.
And if he doesn't, you'll get me or Wilson or maybe actual Waldo, somebody wearing a red and white striped sweater. It's completely possible.
I agree. All right, that's it. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the old football play.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.